Did you know that the 4th of July is on a Thursday this year? That's going to be a full weekend of fun out on the deck, 4 days. But if your deck isn't what it used to be and you aren't using it for great family gatherings, you need to call my friends at All Weather Decks. All Weather Decks is a 24-time winner of the Angie Super Service Award. And they probably help one of your neighbors. Click on the map link at allweatherdecks.net. Call All Weather Decks today at 913-206-1974 or go to allweatherdecks.net and mention you heard it on 810. Call now and relax.
The Border Patrol is presented by Walker Medical Linen Services, locally owned and operated, and HLAC certified, meeting the highest industry standards. Walker has partnerships with hospitals, surgery centers, and medical clinics in and around the metro area. Walker Medical Linen Services in Kansas City and online at walkermls.com.
Midnight great sun slowly into hot summer.
Okay, I'm dealing with a conundrum that I need Todd Lebo and Mark Boerker's help on here.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of Greg Doyle, the author, right?
Yeah.
But I don't have a subscription to the Indianapolis Star. And on Twitter, there's a tweet here from Greg Doyle that says, Colts coach Frank Reich and two players spoke to reporters today. They think everything is fine after that 24-0 loss at Jacksonville, and I just can't. I can't pretend they're not full of. So then there's the column, and I go to click on it. This content is only available to subscribers. I can get unlimited digital access, $1 for 6 months. Then it goes to $15 a month after that. I'm, of course, perfectly willing to pay a dollar to read this article, but I'm terrified that I'm going to forget to cancel that subscription after 6 months, and I'm going to be paying $15 a month for God knows how long.
I wouldn't do that.
Until I finally get my head out of my rear end and do it. So should I avoid the temptation to read this column, or should I spring for the $1 for 6 months?
Don't do $1. You'll forget.
Why do you have to wait 6 months? Why can't you just do it?
Right after I read the article, just go ahead and cancel it?
Yeah.
Here's the deal.
That's why I want to talk to somebody like Bo Ricker.
The comments are from a conference call, so I think you can get the conference call comments elsewhere without paying
that. I want
Doyle's take.
I want to know what he thinks about what's going on with these Colts.
Well, that's
going
to cost you a dollar then.
Don't you think?
It's going to cost you a dollar.
Have Greg Doyle on the show. Marco.
I don't think he does radio interviews anymore.
He doesn't?
He may. I don't know.
Never mind. I'm not going to pay that guy a dollar then. I mean, did that even come on radio shows?
I know that was his policy years ago when he was at CBS that he stopped doing them.
But now he's not at CBS as much anymore.
Maybe not. I don't know.
Hey, shoot your shot, Marco. See what you can do. I think he writes compelling stuff, and I'd like to know what his take is on what is wrong with the Colts and how bad is it, because we've seen it, right, guys? Sometimes you get off to a bad start, and that's all it is a bad start. And you figure things out, and you end up having last year the Chiefs got off to a bad start. People were saying they weren't going to make the playoffs. Turned out they got some things sorted out, and they were every bit the good team that they were supposed to be. Is that the Colts, or are the Colts a mess of a team right now? Because that was brutal this past weekend, Mark Boerichter.
Well, I think part of it is just because it was the Jaguars, okay?
Right.
In a divisional game, and we know where they have been. So I think that's why you look at part of that and say, okay, you know, that's where the speculation and maybe the overreaction comes in. Again, only after week two here. Most of these teams have a lot of work to do yet. Most of these teams in the National Football League are trying to find out, even if they've been decent in years past, where they truly are and what their identity is going to be here through the first 4 weeks. Even the Chiefs are that way. You know, it feels weird this week, and it felt weird Sunday because the Chiefs are already 2 games in and 2-0 because they played that Thursday night game. And now you got to wait, you know, till this Sunday to play the Colts. And we probably all, as Chiefs fans, a lot of people sat here and looked after that game and, you know, great interception for the touchdown, really changed the game. The Chiefs win in a close one against, you know, the Los Angeles Chargers, divisional rival. And probably their biggest threat in the AFC West. And we're sitting high on the hog a little bit going, hey, we're 2-0. But there's still, you know, this defense has played really well the first 2 weeks, but it's still young. They're still coming along. Like, you don't fully know, and other teams haven't made adjustments yet to what you are doing, both offensively and defensively, and that goes for all teams in the National Football League. So, you know, to answer your question, the original question, Nate, I don't know if reading this article is really going to give you the answers that you think you're going to get, you know, because,
yeah,
I mean, you're going to see what he thinks is potentially wrong with the Colts, but and it's a bad loss because it's the Jaguars, but I don't think, you know, overall that, again, the overreactions to everything that happens, you know, is Tennessee as bad as what they showed last night, or is Buffalo that good? I think it's a little of both, to be honest with you. It's just going to be – it'll be an interesting few weeks here. And these next few weeks are going to tell you kind of where teams' identities really are.
And it can still – I mean, it can go even later because it was like Halloween last year when the Chiefs looked like garbage.
Yeah.
Went and got rolled in Tennessee, and then they kind of figured some things out. And I think veteran teams with good coaches can do that.
Yes.
I think young teams have a harder time, you know, if they get buried trying to find their way through it. And I don't know what you call the Colts. They have a veteran quarterback, but he's a new quarterback, right? And they've been chasing their tail since Andrew Luck said bye-bye.
Right.
And, you know, they're as an organization, they've clearly got a quality roster because they've made the playoffs, or last year they were within just going to Jacksonville and winning a game and making the playoffs, and they fell apart then. This is a team, a roster, that came to Arrowhead Stadium and beat Patrick Mahomes in the year they won the Super Bowl. Or was that with Jacoby Brissett at quarterback. I mean, so they have some stuff about them, but they don't have – Matt Ryan's not the guy. You know, I don't think if I were a franchise saying, you know what would really get us over the edge here? Matt Ryan. But that's where they are right now because they feel like they can't go draft and put a young player at quarterback with this roster to get it done. They're kind of in that just – hanging around mode, right? I don't think they're going to be some world beaters. And if this one doesn't work, if you go Phillip Rivers, Carson Wentz, Matt Ryan, and that's what your quarterback solution is in three consecutive years, it may not work for them.
It may not. And it's certainly been interesting because they have, I don't want to call it patchwork because you traded for Carson Wentz, right? On that sort of thing. But they've gone the veteran quarterback route and looked around and said, okay, here are guys that have had some success places. You know, success could be a lot of different things when you start talking about those quarterbacks, but guys that have made the playoffs. Matt Ryan's case, Carson Wentz, I know he wasn't technically the quarterback when they were in the Super Bowl, but he was a starter that year leading up to all that. Matt Ryan's been to a Super Bowl. We know how that all ended. Not necessarily his fault. More on the defense against the Patriots in that one. And Phillip Rivers has been in the playoffs. And so they've looked at it and said, okay, we're gonna use veteran guys who we think are better than drafting because, you know, the old suck for luck campaign worked out for them overall in terms of playoff success a little bit, but they didn't get to the ultimate prize, which is obviously hard to do. And I think a lot of teams look at this front office wise and say, okay, and I've said this too, your whole goal in the National Football League, it's because of the way it's set up for competitive balance, is can we get ourselves into the playoffs and give ourselves a chance to make a run? That's basically what every team is trying to do. The ultimate prize is to win the Super Bowl, but we know how hard that is, which also goes back to, you know, four straight AFC championship games hosting here in Kansas City, what a run this has been. The Chiefs only had one Super Bowl appearance out of that piece, right? Like, it's just
– One win.
One win, sorry. Yeah, two Super Bowls, but one win. It's hard to do. It is hard to do. And if you're running a front office and looking at this and saying, okay, the rest of our roster is really, really good, or we feel it's really, really good, what is the missing piece? Do we go get a young quarterback and hand the reins to him? Or do we go to someone we've seen – who has some playoff experience that we feel we can trust and try to make a run with that first. And that's kind of what the Colts have done over the last couple of years with these veteran quarterbacks. And it just hasn't – the Carson Wentz thing didn't work out for him. Philip Rivers obviously was at the end of his career, and now, you know, Matt Ryan's at the end of his career, but, you know, he's the best option available for them. And so that's the route they've taken. It'll be interesting to see. The other thing I think when you look at this, and I'm going to get long-winded here with this piece, but you look at their division, okay, too. Tennessee's their biggest threat in that division. Jacksonville really isn't. Houston isn't and hasn't been for the last couple of years. It's been Tennessee and Indianapolis. So, you know, I think you approach it a little bit differently, too, from an organizational side of things, looking at what it is in your division, because you feel, hey, these guys give us the best shot to win our division, get ourselves into the playoffs, and then hope we make a run.
Okay, we've got Mark Bo Richter in studio, and yesterday I made the comment that, you know, looking at the spread on this game, the Chiefs versus the Colts, it just defies logic when you watch the way these two teams have played through the first two games of the season, but it's the NFL. And that explains a lot when it comes to why the point spreads are so close. So, all right, how do the Colts, and by the way, it's moved up to 7. It was 6.5 yesterday, so everybody's putting their money on the Chiefs. How do the Colts make this a game? Here's one thing I know from years of watching the NFL and reading about it and listening to people talk. When a team gets big boyed and humiliated in a game, they typically come out the next week looking to prove that they can win at the point of attack. They look to be physical. They look to set a tone. They are going to get challenged all week long. And yes, and last weekend, when you look at the Colts game, Jonathan Taylor was held to 9 carries for 54 yards. Guys, if you go back and look at last year, I'm at the Pro Football Reference page for all the season league leaders from last year. And when it comes to all the rushing stats, Jonathan Taylor's at the top of the list. You like your big play, your 99-yard touchdown reception? He had the longest run last year from scrimmage at 81 yards. Most attempts for the year. Most yards. He is the guy that they rely on, and he's one of the big reasons. He was most people's first pick in their fantasy draft and all that. He gets held to 54 yards on 9 carries last weekend. They are going to come out looking to establish Jonathan Taylor early, often, and consistently through this game, and the Chiefs are going to be without Willie Gay Jr. Handicap that matchup for me. How important is it going to be for the Chiefs to be able to handle Jonathan Taylor in the running game on Sunday?
Well, I think it's extremely important for them. That's the focal point of their offense, is running through Jonathan Taylor. And for me, you know, you've got to slow him down. He's probably going to get his yards. But for me, it's how do the Chiefs slow him down, minus Willie Gay Jr. now, over the next 4 weeks. But as it pertains to this week with the Colts, you know, your linebacker depth is going to be tested this week. And then on top of that, how does your secondary hold up? This defense has played pretty well so far, but, you know, in the first part of the game on Thursday night for the Chiefs, they didn't tackle real well. I didn't think they ran to the football real well. Part of that is it's a short week, I think, and you survive and get through it. But with Jonathan Taylor as a weapon, both in the running game and out of the backfield, he's got to be where Steve Spagnuolo and this defense has the focus. And then your secondary has to be able to stand up to the play action side of things and play action game, because there can be some big plays to be had down the field if you're the Indianapolis Colts in the passing game, because they've got a few weapons on the outside as well. But it all runs through Jonathan Taylor. So, you know, defensively for the Chiefs, you got to focus on that run game and your run fits. But then you can't be overly aggressive in the secondary from your safeties getting nosy up in there, and all of a sudden, you know, Michael Pittman Jr. over the top, you know, type of thing with some of the weapons that the Colts have. So everything's going to run through Jonathan Taylor. Again, if he gets his yards a little bit, I'm okay with that. It's can you keep him out of the end zone? It's almost a bend but don't break type of defense, I think, this week is kind of how you have to look at it. And not that you got to be conservative, because you got to get to Matt Ryan and he will turn the football over. But the focus does have to be on Jonathan Taylor.
We're talking to Mark Bo Richter here, Chiefs and Colts coming up at noon on Sunday in Indianapolis. The Chiefs are 2-0. And, you know, they were a couple of plays away from losing to the Chargers. And it ended up being, you know, at the end, an onside kick. But the review doesn't go their way on the interception. They're down 17-7. The Chargers have the ball, whatever. So I don't think they've been – this isn't the Bills 2-0, okay,
Correct.
It hasn't been in a laugher here. So I don't know if Chiefs fans are a little too comfortable, like, oh, they beat the Chargers and the Cardinals, a couple of playoff teams. Well, actually, the Chargers weren't a playoff team last year, and they're 2-0 and a little too confident right now. What are your major concerns with the Chiefs right now as you've seen them get to this 2-0?
Consistency, I think, is the piece. And you know, I'm not overly concerned about the consistency so far because we are only 2 weeks into this. It's a young defense. Offensively, they looked fantastic against Arizona. I think we all thought that was going to happen. That's usually how an Andy Reid offense comes out the opening week. My concern right now is, and not that this team is going to do this because it's a veteran enough team that I don't think it's going to happen, but my concern this week is this is kind of that look-ahead game, right? You played on Thursday night. You've had extra time to prepare for it. You saw Indianapolis get drubbed by Jacksonville last week. And you got Tampa Bay the following week. You know, you've got some big games coming down the stretch here. This is a game that if you don't really focus in on it, it becomes a look-ahead game for you, you know, where you skip over this one and you're looking ahead to the next couple of weeks. And it's a, you know, it's a conference opponent. It matters in the AFC when it comes down to playoff time and you know, that sort of thing. So, but my biggest concern right now, I think, with the Chiefs is consistency. And it's hard to be consistent throughout the course of the year. You're going to have this through the first couple of weeks. But, you know, I mentioned the tackling on that side of things. They got into a little stretch offensively this past week where they looked out of sync. They were able to get that back. But as you mentioned, Todd, there's a few plays in there that if they go the opposite direction, we're having a completely different conversation this week than we did a week ago. But at the end of the day, to borrow the line from Eric Bieniemy, they're 2-0 right now, sitting atop the division that has not looked great overall in the AFC West. And now you have another opportunity here on Sunday to make yourself 3-0 and get off to a really, really good start and a jump and kind of a head start on everybody else.
We've got Mark Boerichter in studio. Let's go ahead and take a break. We're going to talk more with him. We can maybe recap a little about what we saw last night. But also, we haven't really had a chance to talk as much about the game against the Chargers with Mark as well. That is straight ahead right here on the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Okay, Mark Boerichter and Todd Lebo. You are charged with coming up with your power rankings, your weekly power rankings, acknowledging that what you think right now can change and the reality can change based on whatever happens going forward, injuries, teams improving, teams getting worse, all that. The best team in the NFL right now, after 2 weeks of the season, is Boerichter. You first.
All right. First of all, power rankings in the NFL are stupid. I'm just going to say that right now. But I'll play this game anyway, Nate. Okay.
You know you're thinking it though. Who's the best team in the league right now, as you see it right now?
Right now, in the AFC, I will put, based on what I've seen, the Buffalo Bills there.
Todd.
Hard not to. I mean, I think the Rams maybe have a little Super Bowl hangover or whatever, but what they did on Thursday night, the day the Rams got the rings and all that stuff, was amazing. And then what they did last night was surgical bludgeoning. I mean, it was, you know, it was ridiculous how good they were last night. So if anyone's going to argue with you right now that the Bills don't look great, then they're just like have the Chiefs glasses on. Because the Bills look great right now.
Right. So I think we all agree on that, right? Like and that's why I asked the question, because, look, we all got our Chiefs color glasses on around here, And we get our backup anytime. You know, we look for every slight. Anybody out there, Bart Scott wants to say the Chiefs aren't going to make the playoffs. That's absurd. That's just looking for a hot take. And we're all quick to defend the Chiefs. But if I think if we're all trying to at least keep some sense of objectivity or whatever, realism, we all see it, right? Like, that's the reason I asked the question, Mark, because I'm with you in general. You know, power rankings are stupid. But if we're looking at it through the first 2 weeks of the season, they look like the best team in the league. I think it's important to point out how long the season is and how drastically things can change as the year goes on. But I think if we all agree on that, then let's attack it from here. If the Chiefs are to surpass them at some point through the course of this year, in what areas do they need to improve to be as good as the Bills look right now?
Well, I think there's a lot of plays they can improve. I think the Chiefs this year, like so many other years, it's going to rely on their defense. We know as long as number 15 is your quarterback, you've got a shot. Okay? And the same thing with Buffalo with Josh Allen. I do think that the Chiefs need to continue to improve their running game. We've seen stretches this year in the first two games where it's looked really good. I think that's going to be important for them to – they're never going to be completely balanced, which is fine. And in this day and age of throwing the football, which as a wide receiver I love, you still got to be able to run the ball effectively and efficiently. And the Chiefs have been able to do that so far in the first couple of weeks, but they got to continue with that. I've said this before, they got to get away from so many of the RPO style of concepts and just hand the ball off to whether it's Clyde Edwards-Helaire, whether it's Ronald Jones, whether it's McKinnon or Pacheco, whoever. You're going to get contributions from all those guys. And then defensively, it's gelling, not making the defense too complicated for some of these young guys, bringing them along, adding a little bit more to their plate every single week, and then they've still got to get after the quarterback. That's the one thing defensively yet. I know they've been okay the first couple of weeks, but they have got to get better at getting pressure on quarterbacks and not letting guys stand in the pocket and deliver the football.
That's what it looks like Buffalo is doing a good job with. And they're not entirely healthy, on their line. And I don't know. We mentioned long season, Nate. Von Miller's not a kid, okay?
Right.
But Von Miller, the first 2 weeks, looks like it's 2013 or something. And maybe he'll get tired and it'll break down a little bit or whatever. And maybe, you know, I talked to Seren about this. They mortgaged a lot to sign Von Miller. It's a contract that's going to come back, and it'll be costly for them eventually. But they're trying to win a Super Bowl this year. And this is the kind of move they needed to make to get that done, like just kind of like the Chiefs needed to go make the crazy move to get Frank Clark. Not crazy. The move worked out. I mean, they gave up a lot to get Frank Clark, and Frank Clark was good that first year, and especially in the postseason. But the Chiefs need to get after the quarterback, and they're not doing it so far. Speaking of Frank Clark, he got involved in the run game a couple of times the other day, and that was nice to see, but he is not, you know, getting after the quarterback. And they're not getting after the quarterback. And we'll see if that changes this week. This should be an easier way to do it. Matt Ryan is not super mobile.
Right.
If you can't get to Matt Ryan, I don't know who you're going to get to.
We can really point to some issues in the pass rush after this week if they don't get to Matt Ryan.
Yeah, so that's what I think the Chiefs need to work on. The Chiefs need to get after the quarterback a little bit better. And that would make me feel a little more comfortable about it. But I like the way they've played the run. I like the way their linebackers are young and athletic, but I'm a little bit worried for these next 4 weeks that Willie Gay is not going to be there, because I did not see this suspension coming. Came out of the blue for me yesterday. I wasn't really on my radar.
Wasn't on my radar.
To be honest with you, I forgot about the whole incident.
Yeah. Because
I really did.
It just got handled. I mean, the court part of it got handled. He's on diversion and all this, and he didn't get a felony charge or anything like that. So it's like, okay, well, this is just what it's going to be. And no one had asked. I don't remember one time at any press conference in OTAs or minicamp or up in St. Joseph where anyone said, hey, are you concerned at all about the league with Willie Gay? More than once, Andy Reid was asked, are you concerned about the league and Frank Clark?
Yeah.
Which now, Now, even though it, now I'm starting, maybe the league's going to say something about that at this point, because he's got some resolution, not fully resolved, with what's happening in California with his gun charges. But yeah, you just kind of like out of sight, out of mind. All of a sudden, oh, okay, that's happening now. So I'm not frightened or anything like that, but I'm concerned, because I do think the Chiefs linebackers look good. They look fast. They look young. They look aggressive. And you take out the juice man, Willie Gay, and that may change a little bit.
It certainly will. And to go back on that, this came out of the blue for me yesterday also, because I completely forgot about the incident that he had had, you know, on stuff. And, you know, I know there's a lot of debate and a lot of Chiefs fans out there that are, you know, upset about it. And why is it four games and not maybe two, you know, and different things. I think there's a lot more to it in regards to all of it. You know, the suspensions are extremely arbitrary in a lot of ways. We've seen through the Deshaun Watson situation. I think it depends on who you are in this league on a lot of it and what position you play. The reason I say I think there's more to it, and it's a little more complicated, because Willie Gay is not appealing it. You know, I think if he and his representatives and other people felt that the four games was unjust and it should be two games, they would have appealed it.
Well, you can drive yourself crazy trying to figure out what's going on.
Yeah, and
so that's why. You got 11 games with Deshaun Watson. You got half a season with Calvin Ridley for placing a bet.
Season, yeah.
You know, is it a whole year?
Yeah, a whole year
for placing a bet. Mike Evans, sure, he got in a fight on a football field, but that's no more violent than what happens on every single play during a football game.
And to go deeper into this, Mike Evans and Marshawn Lattimore have had beef for several years.
They got a problem.
Years,
so they're trying
this
to.
Is not the first time that's
they're
happened.
Trying to say don't do that anymore. And, you know, Nate and I talked about this earlier. The reason the police were called in this situation and it became a what's called domestic violence DV is because there was a child involved, and apparently, according to what came out through all the court stuff, there was no physical confrontation between Willie and this lady, okay? A vacuum was broken, a door frame was broken, but it was a scary situation, and that counts as domestic violence in Johnson County, and that's the way they go do this. So don't come telling me that you know what happened or didn't happen
right,
in this
thing,
because we don't
correct.
Know. So you just, this is what the league... And don't tell me about something that happened 7 years ago, because it's 2022 now, and the league is going about this a different way. Mm-hmm. You used to get kicked out for smoking weed, and now you don't. Things are changing. The way they do this is changing. We can't – you're not going to be able to write it down and just say, well, this just fits right in this little hole, and this is what you're going to get, because you can't do that. The important part now is – Willie Gay is not going to be playing for the Chiefs for the next 4 weeks.
Yeah.
And we'll see what happens with him. The other thing, you know, Nate, with Willie Gay, I mean, he was kind of open about this last year. He was emotionally having some mental health issues of his own.
Mm-hmm.
He tweeted about this because, you know, his son was born prematurely. He was obviously having some sort of an issue with the mother of the child because they weren't getting along. I mean, there were a lot of things happening in his life. And I hope this... I hope he's mentally prepared to deal with this at this point, I guess is what I'm saying.
I just want to say this piece, and I really, to be honest with you, wanted to kind of avoid getting into too much of a conversation about who should get suspended for how long and who shouldn't. I stupidly, when I saw the news report last year, made a tweet making a joke about breaking a vacuum cleaner. And I deleted it because people pointed out correctly so right away that this isn't something to joke about. And I can tell you that from a standpoint of it. I don't like to bare my own soul on the radio and all that stuff. But just to point out maybe a perspective here. When I was a kid and my parents were divorced, we lived in an apartment complex for a while. My mom dated a large man who had a drinking problem. And there were a couple times that large man was in the apartment with my sister and me when we were kids. I was a fourth grader, and my sister was a sixth grader. And those were some terrifying moments when a large man that you have no physical ability to combat is not in the proper mind frame, okay? We can make light of a person damaging a door and destroying a vacuum cleaner because he didn't attack the person in the room, supposedly. I just want you to put yourself in the perspective of being in the same apartment with a 6'2", 235-pound NFL player who is so enraged that he's breaking equipment and pieces of property in your apartment, and how terrifying that situation can be. I don't know what led to it all. I don't know the background of all of it. I'm just trying to paint the perspective for you as to why the police become involved in a situation like this and how serious a situation like that can be. And I certainly hope that whatever mental health things Willie Gay Jr. was going through last year, he is continuing to seek help for and is getting better and improving. I'm just trying to paint the picture there that I don't really have any time for anybody griping because he got four games, all right? Because these things are incredibly serious, and they happen all around us all the time. If you think that these types of situations that involved Willie Gay aren't happening with people in your neighborhood right now, and they're all incredibly serious. So I just wanted to say that two-piece, and I'd really, from that point, just like to move on to the football part of things. Because he is a really good player, by the way, and he's becoming a really good player. But the Chiefs are going to have to deal with the fact that he's not around and for the next four games. And it comes at a bad time in that regard, Mark, because to me it looks like he is just starting to hit his stride in terms of understanding what his responsibilities on the field are.
Yeah, and I'll say this just to wrap that up too, Nate, on that piece. That's why I use the term complicated.
I say
the suspensions are arbitrary, and said maybe arbitrary is not the right word, but there is no clear-cut line on certain, you know, events, because every situation's different. And that's why I say
every
it's complicated.
Different.
And that's why
right.
I also say, yes, for those out there that, you know, four games, it's complicated, and the fact that he's not appealing to suspension, Willie Gay is fine with this piece, is what I'm saying. And maybe not completely fine, but saying, okay,
understands
the situation. That's where I'm going with this. But and if to me, the crazier part about this whole suspension piece is this was supposedly resolved back in June or July on things. Why is it now happening 2 weeks, 3 weeks into the season? But that's a completely different story. But if you're the Chiefs in this situation, not having Willie Gay Jr. around for 4 weeks, you have to treat these suspensions just as it would be if you know, he had sprained an ankle and he's going to be out for 3 to 4 weeks. I know they're two completely separate situations, but the point is your player is not there. And so your depth is going to be tested. And the hard part for Willie Gay Jr. on this piece is the fact that he's been playing really well, just to put it from a football standpoint only. He's coming on strong. I would anticipate that he would continue to do that after this is over. The unique aspect about these suspensions is that, you know, you not only have to stay away for 2 weeks and then you can come back inside the facility for meetings and stuff so they can continue to be engaged with him, but you have to move forward as just as if this is another injury to a player on your team in terms of on the field stuff. And that's where you look at this and say, okay, what's going to happen with this Chiefs linebacker court? Because Willie Gay Jr. is the energy. I mean,
the juice.
In some fashions, when you go back to Thursday night, he missed like four tackles in that game, and it was almost all because he got there too fast. He was out of control, you know? And when I say out of control, like, you just got to break down and make that tackle on some of those situations. But the aggressiveness that he showed on the field has, as Lebo just said, has brought some juice to that defense, and he and Nick Bolton hand in hand on that piece. So that to me is going to be, you know, what's the guy that steps up to that? It's Leo Chanel, that linebacker. He's not near as athletic as Willie Gay on that piece. But this week against Jonathan Taylor and the Colts, okay, Leo Chanel's a run-stopping defender. He's going to come up and thump you. This is an opportunity against what would be a former teammate of his,
right,
actually.
Yeah.
The more I think about that, to make an impact in this game. Now, you know, what is the injury report going to look like here over the next this week yet? We haven't seen it yet from the Chiefs from a week ago. These are all things you're going to have to deal with over the course of the season, which goes back into why we talk about this is a long season. We're only 2 weeks in right here. I don't want this to be a look-ahead game for this Chiefs team at all. They've got to focus at hand because you've got to start to learn to play here over the next 3 weeks without Willie Gay Jr. regardless.
Mark Boerichter is our guest. And before before we get here to the top of the hour, I do want to ask you, we talked a lot about this yesterday. As you watched the Broncos the other day, and there's a whole bunch of brand-new coaches in the league. There's like 10, and many of them are first-time coaches. You know, Doug Peterson at Jacksonville is won a Super Bowl and stuff like that. But Nathaniel Hackett's brand new in the thing. When you sit there and watch these guys try to put their stamp on a team or figure out what's going on, what are your thoughts about how he's handled his situation there with the end of the game up in Seattle and it wasn't good at home?
No.
You know, calling some interesting plays on third down, having the home fans count the play clock down. I've said, you know, for years, I think the Chiefs have just dominated this division because they've been very good, but also because they've got a head coach who knows what he's doing, and these other teams to just keep cycling through these guys over and over again.
Look, I made fun of what happened at the end of their opening week. I think everybody did, especially being here in Kansas City, being a fan, right, type of thing, because it happened to the Broncos. If it happened to the Jaguars or somebody else, we probably wouldn't have cared about it as much. It's difficult to be a head coach. It's difficult to be a first-time head coach because there are situations that come up in games that you're just – you haven't handled yet, or it's something that maybe slipped through the cracks with you. So I think it's unfair to judge who Nathaniel Hackett could be as a head coach yet, right now through the first 2 weeks of the season. I will also say this. I think I have a little bit of sympathy for him because it's different than college football and the fact of, okay, this is my program. This is the way I want to run it. You're dealing with professional athletes and guys that all have egos, and guys that are all making, not all of them, but some guys that are making more money than you are on things that can easily say, you know, put the middle finger up to you at any time and be like, whatever, man, on stuff. His situation's even more difficult because you traded for a quarterback who's won a Super Bowl, been to another Super Bowl, and is getting all the attention. In some cases, that can be good because you got a veteran guy in there. But things did not end well in Seattle with Russell Wilson and their organization on stuff. And now he comes in as a starting quarterback for your team. And veteran guys are like, well, this is how I did it before. And this is what I want to call this play call. And this is what I want to do with it. And as a head coach, you gotta mold that and figure out how to deal with that side of things while also doing things the way you want them to be done. So I think there's a feeling out process there that's going on, but they have not looked as good over the first couple of weeks. And I think part of it with the Denver fans is they're not getting the Russell Wilson that they thought they were getting. And I think a lot of us who have watched it, I think Russell Wilson's a really, really good quarterback, but I think his best years are behind him. And I think they thought Russell Wilson's going to come in here, all of a sudden, we're going to look a lot better because we got some weapons on the outside. And the only missing piece that they thought they were missing in Denver was the quarterback. And obviously a new head coach who was going to have a different way of thinking than their previous one has. And the same issues are bubbling back up. Clock management, play calling, all those types of things. So what do I make out of the whole deal? I feel bad a little bit for Nathaniel Hackett. I think it's unfair for us to judge who he could be as a head coach, but at the same time, a lot of these issues are still there.
We'll take a break. We'll wrap things up with Mark Boerichter right after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Okay, guys, so Marco sent me a tweet about a piece of street art that was made in Southern California commemorating Derwin James picking up and body slamming Travis Kelce. It's on a side of a wall, apparently, in Inglewood. Is that indicative right there of what it's like to be a Chargers fan, then, that you have to commemorate famous moments and losses that your team took?
I don't think so. I think that's just, you know, what I mean, whatever. That photo is going to live on for quite a while, you know, type of deal, based on the play. But you know, I don't have any issues with it. It's you know
I've on NFL Network, they showed it about 50 times a day. It was whichever McCourty that is that Devin or Jason, who's on NFL Good Morning America, Jason McCourty. It was his yow play of the game or whatever.
Should have been a penalty, right?
Maybe, but also I think it might have been a fumble. The more I saw it,
no, his elbow was down.
I don't know. No, they someone down. Had their hand in there, and
ground caused it.
It might have been a little bit coming loose. The point remains.
They lost.
I don't complain about Travis Kelce doing anything. If he just would have stayed outside, he walks into the end zone. I don't know why he cut that back in.
Yeah.
It was fine, but yeah, it is. Listen, it's the Chargers. It's the Alamo. Victory and defeat. You slammed Travis Kelce to the ground. You lost the game.
I just thought that was interesting. You know, like let's memorialize something that happened. Or let's commemorate something that happened in a game that we lost again to our rival.
That's Chargers, man.
Mark, the it's got to be the marquee matchup of the NFL this coming week is the Dolphins and the Bills. We already talked about how good the Bills are. How impressed are you with the Dolphins right now with the comeback they had? You think they got something for the Bills? Is that going to be a good game this weekend?
I think it'll be a good game. Divisional opponent on things. This will be the statement game that for the Dolphins to for at least 3 weeks into the season here, see where they truly are. You know, they've played well over the first couple of weeks. I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, their head coach, different philosophies on things. Obviously Tyreek Hill has had a couple of good games, but you know, their comeback against Baltimore this past Sunday was, to me, a little bit more about what the Ravens didn't do than what the Dolphins did, because the Ravens blew some major coverages and
how
clearly has some problems defensively right now, you know, type of thing. Like Tyreek was the second touchdown. He was so open. It was, clearly was a blown coverage in zone.
This guy off to nobody.
Yeah. How is he running that wide open?
Right.
Well, we all know his ability on things, but you know, in his first touchdown, you know, he beat the man and stuff, but Baltimore right now just looks like they have some defensive issues, and that's kind of the crazy part, because that's what Baltimore for so many years has hung their hat on, is how good their defense is. But let's not forget their defensive coordinator is not there anymore, right? Like Wink Martindale left. That was a parting of ways on things. So they've got some things to figure out there. I'm not taking anything away from what the Dolphins have done here the first 2 weeks, because they've looked the part. But that comeback on Sunday was more about what the Ravens didn't do as opposed to what the Dolphins did.
Yeah, you can't score 28 in the fourth quarter without some help.
Yeah.
I mean, you're right, though. You're just going, okay, so you're gonna let Tyreek Hill get behind you, huh?
Yeah, that's the one guy. That's the one guy. Jalen Waddle's a really, really nice player, too. Don't get me wrong. Like, they've got weapons, and the addition of Tyreek has helped that. But you're just going to not cover number 10? Like, that's the part that's baffling to me.
Interesting strategy, Cotton. Hey, Mark, thanks so much for the time. We appreciate it. Keep repping that 99-yard touchdown, man.
Hey, thanks, Nate. I appreciate it.
You got to do it. We'll be back with Jeff Chedid next. We'll talk some more NFL on Sports Radio 810 WHB.